So, one day, at the end of the summer, just after lunch, I was sitting at my desk when there was this frantic banging on the door. It was this panicky guy from the city saying they were digging in the neighborhood and they hit the gas main, and we have to evacuate immediately. So here's my mom and me in our indoor lounging t-shirts, stumbling around, clumsily grabbing shoes and phones and wallets, trying to get out the door. And very quickly, all kinds of emergency people surrounded our block. There was a police car at the end of every street blocking off people from coming in. Two fire trucks pulled up, and many, many gas company cars, one after another. As we and our neighbors huddled at the end of the block, every emergency response person walking by us says, "Oh, this is going to take a while." And that was the beginning of a very long wait. It shouldn't have been that hard. I mean, hanging around outside on a sunny, warm day, I had my phone with 1,000 books I could read, but it was not at all enjoyable. It was tedious and frustrating and tiring and just feeling helpless, as you can probably imagine. So it's the second Sunday in Advent. Advent is a season on the worship calendar for waiting. It's the first four Sundays of a new worship year begins with us waiting for Christmas. But the mood of Advent is not jingle bells or joy to the world, not yet. Instead, it's O come, all ye faithful, O come, O come, Emmanuel, in a minor key. Advent is having your life disrupted by a gas leak, and you're stuck somewhere waiting for the all clear so it's safe for us to get on with life. So there's no pressure in Advent to be more joyful than maybe we're feeling, especially with the hard things going on in the world and the hard things some of us are going through right now. Advent is exactly the time we lean into God with our longings and yearnings for intervention. So why do you suppose there's a season on the worship calendar just to practice waiting? There's a lot more to the theology of waiting than just to get to our Christmas presents, like when we were kids. If you really want to get into it, I recommend this book to you, Tish Harrison Warren. Very user-friendly, called Advent. She's an Anglican priest in Texas who, like me, didn't grow up with the worship calendar, but had come to appreciate how the worship calendar grounds our worship and walks us through our story with God through the year. And every year this time, we practice waiting. Because firstly, Jesus came into the world when the ancient Jewish people were waiting for a Savior to restore them to a good life, when the identity as a people had come under siege to foreign superpowers. And secondly, because Christians have been waiting for Jesus to come back, and this time not as a baby, but as a returning king to finally completely rescue God's creation that has taken a wrong turn. And then we and God will dwell together in a restored creation for eternity. And thirdly, we practice waiting because as Christians, we're always waiting for God to show up in some way, all the time. That we need God to make his presence felt, not just as a past historical event or future event to come, but right now, today, where we are in our lives for all of us who have our reasons to lean into God, for all the ways we need him in our day-to-day lives. So waiting is a sort of everyday spiritual discipline. During the Advent season, the past and the future and the present all converge into 4 weeks of waiting before Christmas. Because from the first moment we decide to enter into relationship with God, we defer to his timing and preference and leadership. So instead of running ahead, we find ourselves waiting on him for marching orders. Tish Warren calls this waiting formed by hope and faith. where instead of having our own goals and plans and goals front and center, she writes, we begin by recalling that we're merely creatures. By entrusting ourselves to the triune God, he's the center of creation and the fulcrum of eternity. Through our corporate waiting in Advent, we slowly learn that our lives find their meaning in God's larger story of redemption and ransom of the whole cosmos. So, are you good at waiting? I think I'm pretty patient until something like a gas leak happens, and I find myself incredibly annoyed. I was crawling out of my skin the time I was stuck in Heathrow Airport for 30 hours. There was a moment standing on the corner when I looked down to our house and realized at any moment it could blow up, and everything I own would go with it. It was sobering. The threat felt real and urgent. The long wait for Jesus to come back became challenging for the first Christians. Trying to stay true to living their faith, it was the worry for Peter and all the other leaders of the church who wrote letters like what we read today from 2 Peter. This was probably Peter's deathbed message, his last words to the church, and maybe you hear some urgency in the words. Like in verse 11, he asks, what kind of people ought ye to be as you live out your faith for the long haul, waiting for Jesus to come back? What kind of people do you aspire to be, to present to Jesus when you finally meet him face to face, eyeball to eyeball? Peter is talking about character and integrity, who we are and what we stand for, even when no one is watching, especially when life gets hard. Because as someone posted on Facebook recently, what's hard about waiting is not just the waiting, but keeping a good attitude while waiting. In our lifetime, there's a lot of waiting. We wait to be born, and we wait in line in grocery stores or the airport. And then there is anxious waiting. So the other night, the power went out at my house overnight for 17 hours. And I got more and more anxious when all the things in my house that ran on battery started beeping in the middle of the night, one after the other. And I started freaking out, realizing there were more things to worry about sitting in the dark that I hadn't even thought about. In times of anxious waiting, we don't even know exactly what we're waiting for. We don't even know if it's coming, or if the thing we're waiting for would actually be the good news we need. And it's all we can do to suppress the impulse to panic and do something rash and reckless. Peter says in verse 8 that God, being eternal, has a different sense of time. That to him, a day is 1,000 years for us. Well, when we're anxious, waiting on him to save us, we would say, God, can you hurry it up? I don't have 1,000 years. In 1946, after the fighting in World War II, Samuel Beckett, the Irish writer, settled into Paris, which was bombed out. A place he described as the capital of ruins. And out of the despair of war, waiting for the world to get put back together, he wrote a rather confusing play called Waiting for Godot. It's a play where nothing happens. Just two guys sitting under a tree, waiting for someone named Godot, and just talking about this and that. And to this day, people argue about what the play is about. People think Godot is God, probably, and the play captures all the anxious emotions and doubts and confusion of human beings waiting on God to show up to put the world back together. But the end of the play, it ends with the two men still waiting. And by the time the curtain comes down, Godot still hadn't shown up. And one critic says the only thing we know for sure about the play is that the two actors wore hats. So before the first Christmas, it was anxious waiting for the Jewish people waiting for Messiah. And it was anxious waiting for the first Christians waiting for Jesus to come back when they had the Roman Empire against them. And the church leaders scrambled to manage expectations because living faith for the long haul in the midst of opposition requires a different kind of toughness and tenacity. like people running a marathon. They have to learn to pace themselves, to stay on course, to pick themselves up when they fall down, and find a second win when they feel like quitting, whatever it takes to stay in the race. Anxious waiting is waiting for life to get better kind of waiting, when power belongs in someone else's hand, because there's nothing more we can do to save ourselves. Like waiting for the gas company to fix the threat, with everything on the line. Like all the people right now around the world waiting for truce, or for rain, or for the rain to stop. There's nothing they can do to move things along. So Advent is an important season for our spiritual growth, because most of the year life is not Christmas presents and turkey feasts and happy carols. Instead, we're regularly in a state waiting for life to get better in some crucial way, for God to do something to unstuck us from a dead-end problem. We're always waiting for God's Spirit to breathe new energy into tense bodies and tired souls, and to encounter Jesus in a fresh way for a new year, because this leg of the race is not finished until Jesus comes back, until we get our resurrection bodies and begin living life in a new heaven and new earth with God, where there's no more tears and pains as promised. Because like the guy on Facebook says, the hardest part of waiting is to wait while keeping character. Standing on the corner during our gas leak, I'm quite impressed with my neighbors. Everybody was sort of keeping good humor, seemingly having a better time than I was. The older man across the street who had a stroke recently was walking with a bit of a limp set with a kind of giddiness. Wow, he says, something exciting happening on our sleepy block. And he even stayed cheerful when his brand new Cadillac broke down. He managed to get his car out before we were told we were not allowed to start our cars because it could spark an explosion. He and the people in his house thought they could take a nice air-conditioned ride, except they barely got a block away when the engine quit. So now they're standing at the end of the block waiting for a tow truck as well. But even then, he made a joke. He said, they don't make them like they used to. And then there's me, pacing and fidgeting because I can't find a good position to settle my body down to read. Because waiting is hard. It was hard for the people in Peter's slow-paced world. How much harder for us when we've been spoiled with speed? We get what we want on demand. We're always looking for ways to speed things up, right? Some morning I boil water in the microwave because the kettle feels too slow. There are people right now trying to figure out how to regrow soil for farming in a hurry, a process that normally takes years and decades, because in a hurry to make things grow faster and bigger, we have used chemicals that destroy the soil so they can't grow anything anymore. When my dad caught COVID last year in Hong Kong, a couple of years ago, he was taken by ambulance to the hospital, only to find himself sitting and waiting in emergency for hours without food or water. So at some point, sick as he was, he got tired of waiting and snuck out. He walked all the way home and just lie down and went to sleep in the hallway in front of his apartment door. My brother had to call an ambulance a second time to get him back to the hospital. So Advent is a boot camp for weight training, for all of us to get good at waiting. A time for our bodies and minds and souls to get used to the sensation of a long wait. If we were to wait with integrity and character. Like those countries like Korea or Singapore where people have to do military service. So every so often you have to go for a refresher weekend. So in this boot camp, we let God recalibrate our compass to set our hopes on Jesus. We choose to go all in with him again with the same urgency as in Peter's last words. Because our world has never for a moment stopped needing Jesus, or the hope and life and love and resurrection from our Creator God. To be good at waiting, we need God's Spirit to train us to delay our need to get things on demand and on our terms. It's a discipline to stick to a diet and exercise regimes if we are to stick to our purpose and mission and not chuck in the towel when the wait gets hard, or just let ourselves go doing what feels good without caring about who gets hurt, for tomorrow we die. Just about the only thing Jesus says about him coming again is that it will be a surprise, and we need to be prepared. So he tells stories about bridesmaids waiting for the wedding to begin, or a worker waiting for his boss to come back to the office from being away. And probably the strangest comparison is in our passage today, Jesus comparing himself to a thief in the night. So by prepared, I gather, Jesus is talking about the discipline and alertness of a guard on night watch. Because without discipline and alertness, a guard is no protection against the thief in the night. And someone will wake up in the morning to find something valuable missing. It reminds me of the time when I was a Boy Scout in Hong Kong. I was chosen to hand a pair of golden scissors to the governor for ribbon cutting. Except the excitement got to me so much, an hour before the ceremony, I got sick and threw up and missed the whole thing. All the times I went to Spanish banks with my friends to watch a meteor shower, I kept missing them when they streaked across the sky because I got tired of staring into the dark and looked away at all the wrong moments. It's hard to think about delaying gratification for years and years and years. But it's slightly easier if we just think of hanging in there for just 5 minutes more at a time. I learned this from this cute Korean drama on Netflix about a teenager who fell overboard, a ferry, and was stranded on a desert island for 15 years. After she was rescued, somebody asked her how she had the discipline to survive and hold out hope for rescue. She says it was hard. She almost gave up after 6 years. And then she started telling herself, just 5 minutes more. Just 5 minutes more. When the night watch gets hard, just go 5 minutes more. Because this could be the 5 minutes before God arrives with help. So who misses out if we slack on our guard duty? I think Jesus is talking with the people who are looking for God's offer of hope and life and love and resurrection. Because the other thing Jesus says about when he comes back is that there's going to be a party. And Jesus tells stories about royal feasts and people who throw away their invitations and the people who get invited off the streets to fill the seats. Growing up, my family never had big Christmas dinners with relatives because my relatives hated turkey. So we would instead have a dinner where each of us would invite people we know who would otherwise be by themselves for Christmas. The mission Jesus left with us is to go and populate the guest list for this big feast at his homecoming. We prepare for the big feast the way we're setting the table while we wait for the turkey to roast in the oven, or the way you get the baby room ready for the baby. Maybe this Christmas you know some people who would be blessed to spend Christmas with you over good food and good company. And maybe this Christmas, in the turbulent times we are, what Fleming Rutledge calls unprecedented global threats, as we enter our wait for Jesus, enters a third millennia, that there are more people who are ready to consider Jesus' invitation to friendship and his good news of hope and life and love and resurrection. Because the other thing we need God's Spirit to train us in is the posture of humility. By definition, we wait because making something happen is no longer in our control. It's out of our hands. There's nothing more to do, nowhere to direct our energy, except to sit still. Waiting puts us in the mercy of the person or thing we're waiting on. Ronald Rollheiser says sometimes the wise thing to do is to choose to accept our helplessness and just give in to it. He tells a story about a professor of his who says the people who say religion is it's a made-up thing is 90% right. Because humans are not completely helpless. God made us quite smart and resourceful, and lots of people get along quite well without God or religion. But it's the 10% of the time. The times when we find ourselves beyond our own ingenuity, that if we're honest and accept the reality of our limitedness, we find ourselves propelled into thinking about God and the ways we need him. None of us created ourselves. Science has yet to find the source of life in our bodies. And as hard as we work at keeping ourselves from dying, we're all at the mercy of the one who gives us life, the God who is the one pushing air into us every time we take a breath. And whenever we find ourselves in a pickle, as long as we're waiting on God, there's always possibility of something to happen that is beyond our own ability to make happen, something beyond what we can imagine for ourselves. Especially when Jesus insists, our God is kind, loyal, and merciful to his children. He doesn't ignore us or toy with our lives, but he loves us and is deeply invested in our development and well-being. Tish Warren writes, I often forget how to wait on God. I begin to believe I'm the master and maker of my own life. I begin to believe that joy is itself made through my own ingenuity and hard work. I begin to believe that the things I most long for are within my grasp if I can only master the mad task of controlling my own life. And into these fever deceptions, Advent comes each year and quietly asks me to pause, to remember that we do not bring the kingdom of God to the world through our own effort or on our own timeline. We wait for the one outside of us and outside of time. We wait for our coming king. John Ortberg says, real life begins when I die to the false God. That is me. Around the time when I started to need a bathroom, standing at the end of the block, I asked one of the gas company guys if it's okay if we went off for an hour or so, and he said, oh, at least three. It would take them eventually 6 hours to fix the gas leak. But much earlier in the day, I actually stopped biting my nails because of something I saw. At one point, I looked down from the corner towards my house, and I noticed that two fire trucks full of firefighters, were all standing in front of our house, leaning against the fence, talking. It made me laugh. And I said to my mom, I guess our house is safe. Now, I didn't know that for sure, only time will tell, but I took that as a good sign that the firefighters thought the safest place to wait on the whole block was the spot in front of our house. Although God seems slow to us at times because he is infinitely more patient than we are, waiting for the right time and the right conditions to act, I think God does do things to help us in our waiting. Have you experienced this? Some people call them grace encounters. And that's the other thing we can be watchful for. The little things God the Spirit in us does to sustain us, direct us, soothe us, and inspire us is the people and events God brings into our lives to remind us we have not been forgotten or abandoned. J.R. Tolkien likes to pepper into his stories what he calls eucatastrophes. The catastrophe with the Greek prefix eu, which means good. Catastrophes are unexpected things that ruin our lives. Eucatastrophes are the unexpected good things that comes to us and change the trajectory of our lives in a good way. Like whenever Gandalf the Wizard shows up in The Lord of the Rings. We want to be alert for eucatastrophes because they will help us in our waiting. God's hand giving us a subtle, reassuring pat on the back. Even though we don't have an organ to see God with us, God will find a way to reassure us that he's here, I believe that, so I look for the signs. And so this is what we do every Sunday and every Advent and every day together as individuals, as a community. We help each other wait while keeping our character and not be sucked into our own dark thoughts and despair. We keep doing good even while we prepare to see Jesus again and receive the good life with him that we've been promised. Over these weeks, the worship calendar has us make time to remember all the ways we have needed God before, all the ways he responded to our prayers, sometimes with unexpected blessing, sometimes the withholding of our wants as a growth opportunity, or because what we want would turn out to be bad for us. And chances are we have new reasons right now to lean into God, new problems for which we have no solutions, new dreams for which we need a plan and resources to make into reality, and new pains that we need help carrying. And so we start our worship year getting comfortable again and leaning into God rather than going it alone. And we lean in together with others doing the same, just waiting on God to do what only God can do. This is Kate Bowler, A Prayer Call Hope. We're saying Merry Christmas, but these are heavy days for our struggling earth, for our countries and their leaders, our friends and families, and for ourselves. Blessed are we with eyes open to see the world as it really is, to hear those who say, "Where are you, God? And where are your people?" The smart and sensible ones who fight for good and have the power to make it stick. This Advent, we wait for the world to be made right. Oh God, help us in our fear and confusion, in our uncertainty and grief, in our despair and longing. Infuse us with a hope that doesn't make sense, with a love that doesn't add up, and with joy enough to endure the long, long nights as we wait in hope for thy kingdom come. Amen.